This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of July 15th. I'm John Gibson, and with me early on a Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen. What's happening, dude?
Oh, life is happening, which is always annoying, but the best thing possible.
I guess as long as you're breathing.
Yeah, well, I think we could do one better than that, but I'm good.
Yeah, things, life is happening. It keeps happening all over me, though.
Yeah, that is, as one of my friends said, like, you know, why do I feel lousy? I said, hey, it's proof of life, but so proof is the fact. But so is the fact that people love you. So, yeah.
Well, I'm doing better than the Lions, so I guess I got that going for me.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that. Because otherwise, I'd be thinking, I don't know what I'd be thinking. You'd be looking over your shoulder.
Or I'd be stuck full of tubes or something. Anyway, on this week's show, we've got fighter slugger Framil Reyes, and we're going to talk the CL's Crunch Bunch standings. We're going to dive into the profiles of no-hit throwing pitchers, discuss a couple crazy endings, and we've got some high heat, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, almost a week ago, I was at the domed stadium formerly known as Prince, up in Tokorozawa, Saitama Prefecture. And the Fighters were playing the Cebu Lions, and the Fighters were in a tough stretch, which is, I think the teams sort of like know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they, you know, there's a thing in sports, don't look ahead. But I have to wonder if teams start thinking, you know, we're playing badly, but next week we get the Lions. So they think everything's going to be okay, you know. Oh, geez! And all of a sudden they've lost three in a row, and they go to Tokorozawa and everything's okay.
Yeah, that happens. That has to be happening this year.
I don't know, but it happened. I remember it happening to Rockton once, and it happened to Nippon Ham last week. They had lost four straight, I think, and they went in and did well against the Lions. Although the Lions actually didn't play half badly. They played weirdly, but not half badly.
Okay.
So anyway, on Tuesday, the Fighters showed up, and the good thing about the Fighters, I don't know if it's still a good thing, but is that they used to, under Hideki Kuriyama, they used to not practice on their Monday travel days.
Mm.
On the travel days when they didn't play, they didn't practice. It was weird, because even like Japan Series, you know, they travel and there'd be an official practice and no Fighters. So that was always interesting. And I the Fighters looked very fresh. And I talked to three players at various lengths.
Mm-hmm.
One until the PR guy informed me that I was not supposed to talk to players during practice.
Pimples. Helpful as a pimple.
To which the only time we can talk to players before the game is during practice.
During practice, yeah.
But so I wrote a blog post about that this week. Anyway, moving on, Framil Reyes agreed to talk. And Ariel Martinez also agreed to talk, but unlike Livon Moinello with SoftBank, his interpreter was not comfortable speaking English.
Okay.
So that interview is only in Japanese and Spanish.
Oh.
So I might post that on my blog with the English text, but that will have to do.
We can always get Claudio to record it in English for us. Can do that.
Could do.
All right. Something to think about.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. All right. Interesting. Okay, anyway, so moving on. And from Framil Reyes, I didn't know. He's from the Dominican Republic. And I asked him how to pronounce his name. And he said, Framil Reyes. I said, dude,
I'm sure that's not. Would you like fries with those frays?
I said, I'm sure your mama didn't tell you like that. And he's kind of laughed. And we talked about this and that. And it was just a joy. He's a big, wholehearted guy. It seems like he just does everything big. And he's a really, really joyful person. So let's have a listen.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Nippon Ham Fighters first-year player, Franmir Reyes.
Yes, yes, yes. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Nice, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So how is everything going this year? It's been a little up and down.
Yeah, it's been great for the first year in Japan baseball, trying to adapt, you know. I will say always the baseball is the same thing everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a little bit tricky with the leg kick that the pitchers have. Sure. The delivery to home plate, it's a little bit different. But, you know, get into it.
I know because you've had a lot of time on the farm. Has those reps helped you get your timing down?
I mean, yes, of course, because when I was up here before getting sent down, the opportunity wasn't, like, that much. I didn't have enough games to like adapt to it, but going down there, like having games every day and at least 4 or 5 at bats, you know, try to get me back in track, I help a lot. Like since I got called up again, I've been making a big difference, helping the team a lot.
Yeah, first at bat.
Yeah.
Like, was it the first at bat, the grand slam?
Oh no, that was a fourth at bat.
Fourth at bat. Okay. I remember seeing that. I was impressed. So, yeah, it's and the team's winning, which is kind of a nice bonus.
Yeah, yeah. Lately, has been a little bit tough, but, you know, it's a game about making adjustments. Sure. And that's what we're doing right now. I'm trying to make every adjustment, moving pieces, trying to do the simple stuff of the game, you know, to get those wins.
Okay, yeah. Japanese baseball is really... they like to say detailed. It's also a little bit of about sort of erasing mistakes.
Yeah.
They might say, oh, you hit the ball really far, but you did 10 things wrong.
Yeah, like I hit the ball pretty far, but sometimes you have to play the small game, you know, to help the team. Sure. It's not always the team is not always needing a home run, so you have to adapt to it and, you know, get used to it.
So what... let me ask. I mean, you had some success in MLB, and then you come to Japan. And what was maybe the biggest question on your mind before when you signed here and before you came? Were you concerned?
I mean, I came really feeling comfortable because the guy that I was talking to from this team is the same person that signed me when I was 16 years old in the Dominican Republic, Randy Smith.
So it's
a scout from the Fighters.
Sure.
Yeah, and
he was.
Yeah. So he was with the Padres when I was 16. He signed me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So a little bit comfortable with that. Aneury Zabala, that you signed with the Fighters too at that time. He's my teammate back in Dominican. So
wow.
I felt really, really comfortable.
Okay, so that was good. And now when you came, of course, I guess first time to Japan.
Yeah,
first. How's the experience been?
Good. I'm loving it. It's a little bit far from home, but people here doesn't make you feel like you're far from home. Like the love, the respect is huge. All the teammates that I have, it's been amazing.
How now? You know, the Fighters are interesting because they have a, you know, it's you used to be you'd come and you were like the person who looked different.
Mm-hmm.
But Japan is changing like the rest of the world. You got you know, two kids who have African parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a mix now.
Yeah, there's one of them, Mizutani.
Yeah.
That he visited Dominican, and I get to see him back in Dominican, in my town. This past off season, he went there to practice with Ketel Marquez, was selected for the All-Star game in MLB. He's going to be the second baseman starter from the Diamondbacks on the All-Star game. So he was practicing with Marte over there, and we're from the same town, so I get to see him there. Didn't imagine that we're going to be teammates at this point, you know.
How cool is that?
Yeah, great.
Yeah, so Now you get to this team is a very young team, and you're like the MLB veteran. Do you feel any extra responsibility from that?
Not at all. They've been helping me a lot.
Okay.
Because like I said, it's just a little bit different baseball, and the pitching stuff is a little bit different. So no matter, like, if you come here with that in your mind, like, oh, I'm a veteran from the major league, I'm gonna kill it over there, like, you're wrong. You have to, you know, take day by day and, you know, see how they work against you and getting that help, extra help from the your teammates.
Okay, what's the next step? I mean, obviously the timing is a huge thing when you come here, because it's the pitchers all have, they have the leg kick, they got the pump, they got this, they got that.
I'm feeling great, and I'm seeing the ball good. I'll say, like, I'm used to it already.
Okay.
Yeah. Got kind of the idea how they're gonna pitch me. I know the zone is a little bit wider, which with two strikes I have to protect it a little bit more. Things that are in the spring training games, like, I wasn't, like, not even paying attention to it, but now it's like a big detail. Depends on the situation that shows up, and you are two strikes, you have to protect the zone and, you know, get a little bit wider. So, like, you know, I feel great. I'm ready, and, you know, I'm going to do my thing to help the team get back in track.
Okay, so making little adjustments to your approach and
of
your
course.
Thinking.
Yeah.
That's so hard after a lifetime of playing a different
game. Yeah, yeah, it is. It is, but, you know, like I said, if you are, like, a pro ball player, you have to understand this is a game that you have to make adjustments to stay for a long time.
It is. And, you know, and like you said, people come here with a thing, with the mentality that they're going to show them.
Yeah.
They often get shown how hard baseball really
is. That's wrong. You have to come here, see how's everything, and then, like, you can judge. You cannot even think that you're gonna kill these pitchers when they're, like, you know, making fun of you.
Yeah. And you're making your adjustments, and pretty soon they're gonna be going, okay, he's doing this now, let's show him something new.
Yeah, it's getting to it. You know, it's getting, like, it's almost there. Almost. I feel ready. I'm doing my thing, like, you know, try to follow every pitch they're pitching against me, you know, try to be smart out there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you.
Good luck and good health this year.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
I appreciate
Hopefully
you.
We'll talk to you later
All
in the
right,
season.
Thank you.
Okay, señores, thank you so much.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome stuff. Really good.
And I won't say to you, as I said to Ariel Martinez, when my limited Spanish became became handicapped, and I said mucho arigato.
Yeah, that's what happens to me. I try to speak Spanish and the Japanese comes out at the end. Yeah,
I know.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah, it's like some sort of virus. It starts slipping out. Okay. So any thoughts?
Well, so first I just want to thank Framil, because his English is great, and I didn't, you know, I checked around a little bit in the preseason who could speak some English and who couldn't, and his name really didn't pop up, so I didn't expect him to be able to speak so well. So that was number one. And then number two, him talking about baseball being the same, but almost in the same breath, saying it's really different. We've heard this before. You know, baseball is the same all over the world, but Japan plays a different brand of baseball. I'm like, well, then it's not the same in that the approach is different. The approach to practice is different. The approach to swings, the approach to pitching, running the bases, sacrificing, which we can obviously see. So those things, you know, I didn't agree with, but, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. This is year 14 of the podcast. And every time we talk to a first year player, they try to, forgive me for saying this part, but they try to mansplain Japanese baseball to us, which I'm not saying Framil did that. He just tried to give his take on things being different, but the same, and trying to make adjustments. But, you know, letting us know that in a way, I guess he can't tell us everything. You know, they can't give away all the secrets, but that he's still in that adjustment period. So, and then I liked what he said about going down to the farm. He didn't take that demotion as a demotion per se. He looked at it as an opportunity to get more at bats. And you're going to have to remind me who said this first. I was thinking it was Tyrone Woods or somebody who went down to the farm and said, you know, I went down to the farm and so-and-so was supposed to be hurt and he's playing every day. And then B, it just gave me an opportunity to get so many more at bats that I appreciated that. And I can't remember who that was. And
well, the first time I heard that was with Craig Brazell.
Craig Brazell, okay.
When he came back, he signed with the Tigers out of independent ball in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the same thing in 2013 with a guy who was hurt during the WBC and kind of went on to a good season, Vladimir Ballantyne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I couldn't remember, but I remember hearing that story that it's a great opportunity instead of sitting around on the bench and maybe getting a chance once in a while against a closer or some other tough pitcher, that you get the four ABs and you get, they don't play every single day on the farm, but they get more games in and you get to play and get those at bats. And so that's better. So I really like, but what I really liked was, and I know you stumbled on this with the question because it wasn't, it didn't seem planned and not like, I know you and I are different. So I'm sure you didn't go in with a lot of plans. And so for the question, but you stumbled on the fact that Reyes and Shun Mizutani played in the DR over the winter, which I thought was amazing because we always hear about these.
Well, they certainly practiced together.
Okay, practiced together. Okay.
I did know at that time because I'd already talked to Mizutani before.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I remember reading it when Mizutani told me. I remembered reading it. So,
okay. All right. So, yeah, I'm thinking, you know, we hear about guys play, Zach Neal, I guess it was, with the Lions in past years told us that there's some pickup games going on in Southern California where a bunch of guys want to stay in shape and get together. And so we know that the baseball community is small and pretty tight, but to hear of Mizutani playing in the DR and trying to understand what is leading to his breakout season this year with the Fighters. And you hear something like that and you think, okay, all right, this guy put in some work in the off season and guys know him. And again, that tight knit community, I think that was the thing that stood out the most for me was that hearing about a guy who, you know, we really had never heard of Mizutani before this season. I hadn't. And I, like I said, I did see him play in a farm game for the Fighters earlier on before he got moved up to the top team. So that had to be sometime in April. And I didn't watch the whole game, but I did see him and I did see a couple of at bats. And I guess he had a hit in one of them, but it wasn't like I said, oh, this guy's going to be up on the top team soon, but you can't do that with one game anyway. So whether it's the results are good or bad, but
well, you can if you're the Hanshin Tigers and they want you to prove that you can play in the major leagues by one pinch hit. And if you fail, it's back to the minors. I mean, well, that's the traditional Hanshin Tigers thing. So,
yeah. And,
go ahead.
Yeah. And then to hear, I don't know about the Hanshin thing because I bet a lot of teams make that decision on one at bat or one day or something like that, or just a practice. But who knows who's making the decisions out there. But I did also like the fact that, and I cannot say this first name, but Anuris Zavala, also the Dominican, that they had been teammates. So, and the fact that when Reyes joined the Fighters, he said the guy who signed him when he was 16 was the same person involved in bringing him to the Fighters. Just such a small world, and you just see it all wrapped up with a bow on those kinds of comments like that. So I really enjoyed it. What about you?
Well, that was certainly it. It was, I was just waiting for the music from It's a Small World to start playing.
It must have been playing in your head already.
And now I had that. I had treatment for that when I was 12.
Oh gosh!
A couple of things. But yeah, the first one, of course, was the same as yours. Baseball's the same, but my take is slightly different. You know, there's a core, which is unchanged, but those things are abstract. I mean, yeah, some of them are concrete. The distance between the bases, the number of outs and strikes and so on. the equipment is more or less the same.
Mm-hmm.
But and after that, it varies. You know, your mileage and lifetime with this equipment will vary. And really, that's the but. And that was interesting how he approached. I always love that question because I always get the same answer. I get different varieties of the same answer.
Sure, sure.
And then they explain how it isn't the same. And the thing that I really enjoyed is I'd been having this discussion this past week on another story about how players who go to MLB, it was a story, I had to write a story about Japanese players going to MLB. And one of the things is outgoing players are very important. Not because being outgoing helps you play baseball, but being outgoing helps you get help.
Mm-hmm. Meaning?
Meaning if you're shy and you're afraid to ask, you don't get the help you need to get, especially for Japanese players who grew up accustomed to being told what to do, told how to do things. They go to MLB and the coaches are waiting for them to tell the coaches what the player needs to do.
Sure.
What he needs help with. So I think that has sort of occurred to me as a gap that prevented somebody like Kei Gawa from doing anything in MLB because he's just so painfully shy.
Mm.
And I'm sure that's not the only reason, but I would believe that's one reason. And Kensuke Tanaka is another guy I would put in that bucket.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. So anyway, so moving on and he, you know, and I asked him, we know sometimes MLB guys come and they have different skill sets and they have different experiences. And mm-hmm. Ariel Martinez told me that sometimes there were pitchers in the Dragons minor league team that wanted him to catch them because they wanted to play overseas and they wanted that extra little bit of information about how things work somewhere else.
Sure. Makes sense.
Okay. So I asked him, you know, when I asked from Mel Reyes about this, he said, you know, they're giving me help.
Yeah.
I'm getting extra help from my teammates and from my coaches. And I thought that was just wonderful. And of course, another comment is, of course, I often throw this out there about how hard baseball is. And his line is, you know, you think you're going to kill it, but you can't kill it if they're laughing at you.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I understand that guys, and still the impression, you know, I had a friend recently come over to Japan and we went to a couple of baseball games that's documented on X. And he asked me questions about Japanese baseball that lend to the notion that people still see it as this really inferior league and that guys should come over here and bash the heck out of these smaller players who physically don't have as much power, ostensibly. And I'm like, no, that used to be the case long, long ago, but it's definitely not what we're seeing now. And you can have players come over here from the major league, you know, organizations from their minor league squads and just get punished, much less guys who have played in the major leagues and think they have, you know, they have something to offer to Japanese baseball. And not that they think they're going to change it, but they certainly think they're going to come over and have success. And then, you know, back with their tails between their legs, flying on a plane, going home, having done nothing mm-hmm. and looking for, you know, and having barely played on the top team and failed in the minor leagues.
And not guys who couldn't play either.
And
I mean,
guys with some talent, yeah, who go back to the States and produce. Yeah.
Happens. It happens, you know. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, so that was certainly, that line was wonderful. And I guess the last bit, and I think, you know, it's really funny when you talk to somebody and sort of what they say exactly meshes with what we see.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not always the case. I mean, it's pretty, baseball is rarely that neat and tidy.
Right.
We don't always see the results that players feel in their abilities. And maybe they don't feel, you know, they mistake their their good feeling for actual progress.
Mm-hmm.
And progress. You know, I feel like I'm making progress with my swing or my delivery.
I gotcha.
It feels good, but it ain't working, and nobody thinks it's working but him. He has some reason to believe, as they say. So anyway, so there's always that little bit. We never know what really is.
True.
Even the guy who's doing it doesn't always know what it really is. But he said, and this was before the game against Cebu, when I did not see one of his at-bats because I was working on something else for an instant, looking at another story. But the three at-bats I saw, he hit the ball really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, good. And since then, he has been hitting the ball really well and drawing walks, and he's looking like a guy who is where he wants to be. And he said, I said, how's it going? He says, I'm almost where he didn't. I'll paraphrase him. He says, I'm almost where they need to start adjusting to me.
which is a good spot.
Okay.
A good spot, unless, you know, they do make the adjustments and now you're lost again. But but that, you have to get to that spot. It's important. You have to get there to make progress. Yeah. And one other thing I did want to mention was that notion of team batting that he brought up. He said, you know, you don't always need to hit a home run. You have to play the situation. And I think that gets overlooked and undervalued in the States. I think a lot of guys seemingly are going up there, Shohei Ohtani included sometimes, just, you know, I'm going to go up there and do what I do, and the results will be the results. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's good, but right now, if you just get a ball to the outfield, or if you just put the ball in play and don't strike out, or if you just do these things and maybe try to move a runner up, you'll be in a good position to get that run home, and you got a really good closer, and you can win the game. But yeah, I don't see that playing out a lot watching Major League Baseball. I see guys taking their regular swing, but you do see that more in Japan. And I think that started to rub off on Reyes. And I think you said he was hitting the ball well, and I think he's hitting his line drive, but he was hitting some rockets, and it didn't look like he's worried about launch angle and all this other stuff. Just, you know, hit the ball hard, get it in play. We'll go from there. So, and that's a big adjustment for some guys.
Yeah,
so.
the sort of like almost, you know, it's weird. It now that you mention it, the whole thing. Hey, did you know that people have different swings here with two strikes?
Yep.
I'm going, whoa, that's a, you know, it's like we hear it every day, and we see it and we hear it, and we, you know, and we know pitchers do it. But yeah, in MLB, it is a thing with a lot of players, but not with everybody.
Not with everyone. That's right. That's right. All right. Well, thank you so much. It was a good chat. And no one else I have heard in a long time, because it looks like Reyes is 6'5". He's 250 plus pounds at least. And no one's voice sounds more like the image that I had for him than... than Reyes. He sounds exactly like I thought his voice would be like, and especially in English. But again, really good English speaker, and we're so glad to have him on the show. So thanks to both of you. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the CL Crunch Bunch. So this race, I really don't remember getting to the close to the All-Star break like this and seeing this much of a log jam. Let's say, I mean, from top to bottom, we've seen it where there may be four teams and there's a 5-game difference among the four teams. But other than, I think the Swallows are starting to drop off a little bit. Even that team with a 5-game win streak could turn things around. So it's not really that far out of the mix here. But as we sit here right now, the Giants are in first place with 42 wins. And then the fifth place team is the Dragons, and they have 37 wins. So that's only 5-win difference. Now the losses are obviously going to be playing a role in this thing, but and with 32 wins, the Swallows are 10 wins behind the Giants, but the 46 losses, they're 11 losses back in the loss column. So that hurts their chances. But I still say 5 wins in a row, and they're right back in this thing. So,
yeah, four or five game winning streak, and they're a playoff contender.
Yeah, and the Giants have won 7 in a row to get to this spot. So that's gonna come.
Yeah, 7 in a row, and they've got no separation.
Yeah. Yeah, and so the Carp are right there. They're in second place, or considered in second place with 40 wins, and then the Bay Stars have 42 wins. Again, just the number of losses are what's separating these teams. And then the Tigers with 40 wins. So that's four teams over 500 playing really inconsistent ball. But I say inconsistent, but there's one thing that I noticed that has been very consistent, and that is that the DeNA Bay Stars don't seem to win against winning teams. They are smashing the Dragons again. I think they won almost every game against them a couple years ago and had this long winning streak, including at Nagoya Dome, or whatever dome you want to call it, the dome in Nagoya. But they tend to lose to winning teams, and they're 4-8 against the Giants. They're 5-7 against the Tigers, and they're 4-7 against the Carp, all with winning records, those teams. But they're combined 18-10 against the Dragons and the Swallows. And so, you know, they played fairly well in interleague, so they have a winning record, blah, blah, blah. I just, you know, we're seeing it now in this series, this weekend series against the Giants, that they're close, but the cigar is just out of reach in terms of, you know, winning against the good teams. And they have to rectify that if they're going to make a push, because they really made a strong run here recently, and they to get to, I think they got up to second place. I don't think they got into first place. But to get over that hump, they're going to have to beat these good teams. Now, what are you seeing in the standings here?
Well, now that you mentioned that, I see they are. Yeah, they've lost about 2/3 of their games to the other pennant contenders.
Yes.
So yeah, it happens, and actually that's I don't think it's troubling like it used to be, because before we invented DeNA, before we discovered DeNA, and they were run by different ownership, a trademark of the Bay Stars was a team that did well against the other bad teams and did really poorly in the second half after they were eliminated. It was like they just knew, you know, they knew the script. And I say badly against good teams and badly in the second half. They were like watching one of these super talented players we know in NPB who, if they don't think the game is worth their effort, you can tell.
Okay.
And if they're winning and they're having a good time, they're playing like the next Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, things are different.
And then
I gotcha.
And then when things are going wrong, they look like Marvelous Marv Thronberry, who Casey Stengel once said, "We was gonna get you a birthday cake, but we were afraid you were gonna drop it."
Wow, love it. Well,
that was a thing about the Bay Stars, but manager Kiyoshi Nakahata, for all his bluster and nonsense,
yes,
did fix that. You know, he kind of fixed that thing. The Bay Stars became a team which played sort of at the same level of consistency against everybody. Okay, they beat the bad teams more and they beat the good teams less, but there was not that huge split.
Sure.
So this year is a little troubling. I think it's probably more troubling for Bay Stars fans who are going like, goodness me, we thought, you know, I thought we'd stop wetting the bed in this fashion.
Yeah, well, I think I'm not
good
sure
for
that
you.
I
approve of that.
I think, therefore, I am. The Bay Stars, I believe, can compete in a playoff scenario because they have. I think they're going to have, when we get to the end of the season, they're going to have at least two or three quality starting pitchers, and then the other guys can get them through a game. If they can score, they're going to keep the game close. The bullpen might be an issue, But I think in terms of matching up with starting pitching, I think they're there.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah. What about the Giants? They've been kind of up and down. I think sometimes they looked like they'd never win another game. They had a skid, and then they actually put together this winning streak that we're seeing now. But really up and down under rookie skipper Shino Skiabe. And, you know, there have been the typical changes. We've seen players get sent up, come up from the minor leagues and try to sort of produce a little bit. Ilya Hernandez has been a huge find. I think since he has been on the team has been winning more consistently. Even though we can't pin that dude down for an interview, he got away from me again yesterday. He's slick, but you know that I don't think any of us had in our prediction show. I had them finishing third. You had them finishing fourth, and Claudio had them finishing third as well. I don't think anybody expected a first place run. And for them to be in first place as we are heading toward the All-Star break, I think it's somewhat of an upset in that respect. But, you know, players up and down, they had a trade. They found Hernandez. So what are you seeing with the Giants?
That's what do I see? Well, I see the biggest problem the Giants have had has been with the health of Taisei Ota. Because, you know, it seems like pretty much every team, you know, they want the one guy, they want players they can depend on in specific roles. Now, sometimes those roles are overstated and they make a big deal about it. But there's really something to that in a way that changes with every player and every team. You know, if you know there are people who are reliable and dependable and they're doing enough to maintain that, it just keeps the positive vibes afloat. It keeps everybody else, I don't have to do too much. I'm just here to, you know, I'm here to work on my game and get better. Not to worry about what the team's doing because other people are doing their jobs. But when it's, you know, but when your closer is not getting it done or he's hurt, it's like that's generally a thing because every team wants to have a closer, unless you're the Hanshin Tigers and they've decided they've got two and they'll split, which is fine also.
Whatever works, man.
exactly. Whatever works. But teams like to have one. I mean, obviously, in the Swallows didn't have Kazuto Taguchi for much of the season. And I'm not sure if they had him last night either.
But, hashtag high.
But the whole point is when a key role, and I'm not picking on closers, isn't doing what you expect, then it creates opportunities for failure. It creates more opportunities for failure, real or imagined. So I think that's been a big thing. Another thing has been the health and the success of Hayato Sakamoto.
Yes.
One of my takeaways from the Giants last year was when he was healthy, they won. And when he wasn't, they seemed to be at the mercy of Tatsunori Hara's whims.
Mm.
Now I'll tell you, Shinosuke Abe's got whims like Hara never dreamed of, but you know he likes to pop around. Unlike Hara, he knows what's on the farm because he was the farm manager for a couple of years.
Sure.
So I think that's a good thing. It's distracting, you know. This guy's back. Oh, I didn't know he was gone. And you know, you look at the Giants lineup, and it's a little different all the time. The main pieces are more or less the same, but they have been shifting a lot. Now, I don't think that's I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Outsiders look at teams and they say, well, they all can't be the 2023 Tigers, where Akinobu Okada just says, okay, Yusuke Oyama, okay, you guy over third base, you go to first, and you guy in right field, you go to third, and don't leave. You know, if I leave the room, stay where you are. and you guy at shortstop, you were pretty good. You go to second base and don't leave. Don't move. Okay. Now, that worked great last year. It isn't working great this year. nobody's, I don't hear anybody saying, well, that's the problem. He's leaving people at the same place too much.
Right.
But, you know, last year's solution is not this year's solution. So, correct. You know, there is no right answer, but there are plans, and sometimes the plans work and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. You went from one topic to another, but I did want to say about Hada, we did see him. I know you said Abe might know the farm players a little bit better, and that's probably true, but we did see Hada not hesitate a lot to bring up new blood and insert those players into the lineup or onto the field in some capacity. So
that's true. That is true. And of course, that was his trademark when he started. And then for a few years, I think what happened was as he got older, he got bolder and bolder with that.
Okay.
And more careless about it. More whimsical.
Oh, random. Yeah.
This guy is not as good as I think he should be. So, and then he'd take the famous example of a second baseman who could not hit his little sister's weight in the minor leagues.
Whoa.
And decided that he could hit in the major leagues because Hara knew. And as I said to somebody, I might have been on a podcast, I said, you never know. I think I was last week. You never know when somebody has bad stats in the minors, whether they're really bad or something. There's another, or for a short time, you never know whether it's the bad results are a sign of a ineffective player. But there is a point at which, you know, a guy has 1,000 at bats and they do nothing. And I told SoftBank about a player, a SoftBank GM about a player once, if you know why he's really bad, you know, and you think he's good, you don't trade him. But if you don't have any reason to explain his poor performance, then yeah, get rid of him. Get somebody good in that uniform.
Right. Gotcha.
So, but Hara was weird like that. He would bring up people that, you know, for no reasons, and then send them back for no reasons. First mistake, bam. Sorry, kid. I thought you were good, but you're not good enough to play for me.
Yep.
I feel that Abe is a little more methodical in that, and that the switching around of players is more of a plan.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't watch the Giants enough to know, but the result, I'm not going to argue with the results for a team that's had some issues this year.
Yep.
I mean, Yoshihiro Maru has been ineffective for spells. Hayato Sakamoto has not been effective for spells. Tai Seota, as we said.
Been injured. Yeah.
Yeah. Tomoyuki Sugano started on fire and he's kind of disappeared the
slow
last
down.
Few weeks.
Oh, slow down. Yeah. Yeah. But he's,
happens,
he has had his share of injuries as well. Yeah. But they're on top at the moment. Now, the Carp, that still is a really interesting team to me, because this is a team that's finding ways to win games, but they had to scrap for runs. They've had to pitch their way to wins. And they just don't have one player who has been an offensive force kind of driving the team. They haven't even had a person who stepped up as a player who needs to be feared regularly. They just put it together. Somebody, you know, yesterday on Saturday, it was Tomoki Ishihara with a solo home run in the 11th to win a 1-0 game. But there were that game, for being a scoreless battle, it had a lot of action. There was a lot of activity going on in the game. It wasn't like watching one of those ugly Dragons games where they just, you know, maybe get a guy on with two outs and then the next guy pops up a pitch that's way out of the strike zone, or they get a couple guys on and hit into a double play. There was a lot going on in terms of what the Carp were doing. So, but I don't know. I mean, to me, the Carp, and they, what are they, 3-9 against the Dragons? And I think it's because the Dragons know they're going to struggle. They know every game is going to be tight, and they've been playing in these tight games for a long time. It seems like the Carp had been expecting to score runs and expecting someone to eventually get a hit or a home run here or there. And they have more, quote unquote, home run hitters or guys who are capable of hitting home runs in their lineup than the Dragons seem to have. but they weren't winning consistently. And now they're starting to win these close games consistently. So I think they have the arms to hold down some of the other teams. But just like the Dragons, these guys in the bullpen, they have to pitch every day. And we might see a drop-off of efficiency. We have already seen it with a couple of the Carp pitchers, but because of all the work, maybe in the second half, that might be the thing that drags them down. I don't know. What are you seeing with the Carp, and well, what do you think about that team?
Well, definitely they're sort of stretching the boundaries of, you know, how far can you go without any power?
Mm.
And they're for until he was hurt a couple of weeks ago, Shota Suikane was their top home run hitter with 6 home runs.
Yeah.
And now he's tied with Ryosuke Kikuchi.
Gosh. Yeah, that
speaks for itself. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So they really don't, I mean, and Kaito Kozono is like a time bomb.
Yeah.
You know, he's there, he's playing every day, and then all of a sudden he goes, you know, he'll be 1-for-4 most of the time, and then one day he'll go 3-for-4, and you just cannot get the guy out.
Right.
So that's really the Carp in a nutshell, so to speak. So they've just got guys who can do it. They just don't. Somebody always seems to be doing it, and some starting pitcher Daichiro Sera is having a wonderful year. Hiroki Tokoda is his usual self. Alan Curry, despite not winning any games for a while, has been fairly solid.
Yes.
You know, good game here, lousy game there.
Although you know how I feel about the word solid, so.
Yeah. Okay. I should say liquid.
Yes, solid is something you use in science. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, he's dependable at a certain level. Yeah, let's put it that way.
Yes.
Masaya Yano's been fun to watch. So, you know, even, you know, a trademark of the Carp has been a bunch of guys. You know, I've said this before, they've been sort of the Central League version of the Lotte Marines. Just a whole large ensemble of guys without a big star.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the lineup. Although,
yes.
And to my I don't know, disappointment, I keep waiting for Shogo Sakakura to come back and remind us why he was so good a couple of years ago.
I told you then I didn't see it.
Well, I see it, but it hasn't. It doesn't flourish.
It.
Yeah, he's a small guy, and that's a hard thing. But yeah, there are guys who succeed.
Yeah. So again, you know, I would introduce the notion that we shouldn't be surprised when we see a team fall off in the second half for whatever reason. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's the Carp, just because the arms are getting so worked over. I can't call what the Dragons are doing if they seem to go further down into the depths. A fall off or a drop off, because they're not that high in the standings anyway. So they would just drop to the very bottom. And the same goes for the Swallows because of the pitching situation. They need to get more innings from starters and put a lot less pressure on the bullpen. But the teams, you know, like I said, the Bay Stars, I think that we talked about their defensive issues last week. I think they kind of came to the forefront during this week here, and some of the losses that they had. The Tigers just can't seem to get it going. They've lost 2 this weekend in Nagoya, one a pitching battle, the other a hitting battle. And you lose to a hitting battle to the Dragons, you really have to feel bad about yourself and really have trouble looking in the mirror the next day to give up 10 runs. I think it was the first time all season the Dragons had scored in double figures, probably be the last. But so yeah, I as far as everything being crunched up and bunched up here as we go toward the second half, and we'll talk about that probably in a couple weeks with Claudio. I think he's going to be on the show soon. So I'm interested to see who in terms of contenders, who falls off and who is able to show the consistency to push this thing to the end. Because again, going to have that big advantage in the playoffs of playing you know, only one round and playing at home if you can win the title. So it's really going to be interesting to see which team does that.
Do you get the vibe that, I don't know, when I look at the Central League, I get the feeling that this is the, I don't know, this is like if you were playing in English football and the championship team of the second division, which is now called the championship for some reason, has to play the championship team of the Premier League.
Are you trying to say soccer? Did you say football?
Yeah, football.
Oh, you mean right. Soccer though? Okay, because you know.
I mean what you're saying, yes. But football, yes.
I'm thinking NFL. Really, I'm thinking, well.
Yeah, you would. That's okay. That's all right. It's just you. It's okay. It's not, you know, being American. It's all right. There's no penalty for that. the lower division team, you know, their prize for winning the league is getting to play the best team in the other league.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
And I see the Central League teams going, the winner of the Climax Series goes, wow, we get to the Japan Series, and assuming it's the SoftBank Hawks are going to be playing, they're going to be thinking, oh, this is going to be fun.
Hey, man, life is a challenge, as we talked about it in the opening. Indeed.
Well, of course, they're professional athletes and they're competitors. You know, they've been nurtured as competitors, so they're not as pessimistic as I am about it. And, you know, they got to go out and play. Because nobody's perfect, as you know, even the best teams don't win all the time.
True. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about no profiles. So I went out to eat with MPB tracker Patrick Newman while he was in Japan during his trip recently, and we were watching a game on TV at this place where we were eating, and a pitcher had a no-hitter going through five innings or something, and Patrick said, well, the guy's not going to finish it off because he doesn't have that other pitch for the third time through the lineup, so he's not going to get it. And I felt like, well, you don't have to have another pitch. You just have to execute the pitches you're throwing. You know, it didn't seem to me like that was a good excuse for not finishing a no-hitter. You have to have some fortune, but you have to hit your spots. And if I don't think a no-hitter is about having that elite third pitch or anything in terms of you being a great pitcher or not. I think you just have to execute, because we've seen no hitters by pitchers who probably had no business throwing a no hitter.
Absolutely.
So I wasn't sure that was a thing. So we left that night and we kept messaging each other. And then Patrick sent me a list of the guys who had thrown a no hitter. He essentially copied and pasted the Wikipedia over the past 20 years of guys who had thrown no hitters. And of course, on that list is Masahiro Yamamoto, an example of a guy who didn't have any kind of a fastball really. And he would throw the kitchen sink pitch on the first offering of the game. You know, he start the game off like that. So, and again, you're talking about within league play, you're talking about the fact that there really are no secrets. Even if you have a third pitch, the guys have seen you multiple times already this season. They've seen you, if you're around, like most pitchers who are good and good enough to throw a no-hitter, you've been around for a few years. They pretty much know you anyway. So what is the advantage of another pitch? So it started to make me think about what the profile is of guys who have thrown no-hitters the past 20 years. And I didn't dig through hard. I don't have all the data like you do. So I just kind of went off of what I could remember. But I did go back and count. So over the past 20 seasons, and we had a long drought. I didn't realize this. I remember when we talked about the drought, but there have been 20 no-hitters over the past 20 seasons, but there was a drought of from 2007 to 2011 in which we had none. And then I started to think about the guys, you know, I could remember. And I remembered the Rick Gutterson no-hitter when he was with the Swallows, I think it was, or did he no-hit the Swallows when he was with the Hawks?
He was the Swallows, I think.
Yeah, he was the Swallows. The Eagles. Yeah. And then we had Masahiro Tanaka, we had Kenta Maeda, blah, blah, blah. We had a bunch of guys all the way up to Daichi Osara throwing one just recently. So here's my thing. I don't think we don't see guys who have elite fastballs, or the guys we think of who have shut down wipeout sliders or all these kinds of things, throwing no hitters. What we've seen is guys who have been able to execute and perfect their craft most of the time for one night. There was one guy on there. I don't know. I think there's one guy, I think, who has the elite fastball on this list of 20. And it's not necessarily 20 guys, because Yoshinobu Yamamoto threw two no hitters, or threw two before leaving for the major leagues. But it was Roki Sasaki who really had this elite shut down fastball and then other pitches to work off of that, who has thrown a no hitter in the past 20 years. The other guys all used their every pitch that they had in their arsenal, but they weren't necessarily fastball guys. What did you notice when you looked at the list of guys?
Well, everybody, we talk about Masahiro Yamamoto. He did have a fastball. It was just not, really fast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was fast, but it was the pitch that moved, it had arm side run to it and it stayed up. He had good spin on it. So it was a quite departure from all the other stuff, the other varieties of different pitches, legal or illegal, that he threw. As pitching coach Tom House, who claimed to have taught him the scuffball.
No, that's screwball. So, you're mispronouncing that.
Guys in
Japan don't cheat.
He showed him. He said he worked with him how to carve his initials with his belt buckle. Anyway, so it was an interesting group. I counted 22 no hitters, and if we go back to actually 20 years, that would include Keigawa's 2004 no hitter.
No, it
was because it was in October.
Yeah, I wasn't counting the 2004 season.
In the past 20 years from today, there have been 22 no hitters, also including Tomoyuki Sugano's playoff no-hitter.
Okay.
So let's just go with those. So of 22, I had four by players who led their leagues in strikeouts once.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a confusing way to say it. So they were one-time strikeout leaders, but not necessarily in the season they threw their no-hitter.
No, John did a different count. But four guys, there were 22 no-hitters, and of those 22 no-hitters, two by one guy, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Okay? There were 22 no-hitters, and 21 different pitchers threw no-hitters.
Okay.
In the past 20 years.
Okay.
Okay. Now, of those, 12 of those no-hitters were thrown by people who have not won a strikeout title before or since.
Okay, so they have never won a strikeout title.
Okay, we had two of the no hitters were thrown by Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who won four strikeout titles.
Right.
One was thrown by a pitcher who had three. That was Toshiya Sugiuchi.
Okay.
Three were thrown by players who led their league in strikeouts twice. Kenta Maeda and Tomoyuki Sugano and, hold on, my eyes are not
Sugano? Good. Oh, you're counting the playoff no hitter.
I am, okay. And yeah. Kodai Senga.
Okay, yeah.
Four by guys who did it once, which is a bunch. And just for curiosity's sake, I'll mention that Yudai Ono, who threw his no-hitter before his monster season, he has the record for leading the league in strikeouts with the fewest strikeouts.
Okay.
Which is not surprising, because that was 2020. It wasn't it was like 130 game season. It was a short season. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the guys who threw no hitters in the year or in the season in which they led the league in strikeouts were Sugiuchi in 2012, Senga in 2019, and then Yamamoto did it twice, 22 and 23. So just three pitchers, but four times. So that's not a thing. And then the left-handers, I noticed it was heavy right-handed no-hitters. The only left-handers, Masahiro Yamamoto, 2006, and then Sugiyuchi, and then Yudai Ono. And all the other pitchers are right-handed. And I wondered if there was something going on with that. But here's the other thing. We have some outliers, if you will, on this list. I think Guttormson was a good pitcher, but it's not a he never had a game which we thought, oh, he's got no hit stuff today. He just up and threw one. Daisuke Amaya of the Dragons, who was rewarded for his perfect outing of 8 innings in the 2007 Japan Series by getting to throw a no hitter on in June of 2013, but he again not a great pitcher. Would never expect him to throw a no-hitter. I think when Ryan Yasuhiro Ogawa, when he threw his 2020 no-hitter, he wasn't at the peak of his powers. So it was kind of unexpected. And he really hasn't thrown anything close since then. He just has been a mediocre pitcher. He hasn't been mediocre, but he hasn't been outstanding. Now Higashihama of the Hawks up and threw a no-hitter. I think that was pretty much unexpected. And then we've got Cody Ponce, and then Shuta Ishikawa. Those guys, to me, are outliers. Even Daichi Osada, I think, you know, he has been good, but not a great elite-looking pitcher, and all of a sudden he throws a no-hitter. So,
yeah, his no-hitter was, as I said, when we talked about a little while ago, was extremely unusual that a guy walked more than twice as many as he struck out.
Right, right. Even Shun Yamaguchi's no-hitter, I think, was kind of unexpected. So all the guys on this list, we see, like, you know, Kenta Maeda went to the major leagues. Sugiyuchi probably could have gone to the major leagues. Roki Sasaki, we expect to go to the major leagues. Shota Imanaga in 2022 threw his. He's in the major leagues now. Yamamoto in the major leagues now. Shosei Togo this year probably has a chance if he wants to go late in his career. And then Daichi Osada, who came on, broke in like with, you know, a lot of fanfare, but certainly didn't expect him to come to this point and be such a shutdown pitcher. But he's more of a pitcher now, and he was more of a thrower when he broke in. It's a real interesting potpourri of pitchers, if you will.
Yeah, I think your initial responses you have to execute, and I think really that is the thing. I've noticed, you know, when I talk to MLB scouts, almost the profile of a young Japanese pitcher is a guy who has an electric pitch. You know, you just look at it and you go, man, he can throw that pitch. Boy, look at that slider, look at that fastball. And then the next time you see it, you go, what happened to that pitch? I would say virtually every, with the exception of guys who seem to have everything from the start, who stuff is so good and so consistent that, you know, it's over, like a Hisashi Iwakuma was. But typically you'll see a guy come up and he'll have a really good, you know, some his pitches, one pitch will look really good. Next time you go, this isn't the same guy. He can't locate it. The back foot slider is now sitting on a tee up in the strike zone. And I think some of that has to do with the way Japanese baseball is run, which is haphazardly. I don't mean that as a pejorative. It's just the way it has developed haphazardly, where until 2010, there were four or five different balls in play. And there were 12 major league ballparks with 11 different kinds of mounds, not counting local ballparks. These things all add up. And, you know, a week between games and this and that, and mixing and matching starting pitchers, I think these have an effect on how well pitchers develop their pitches. And they throw a zillion pitches in the bullpen, but bullpens aren't games.
No.
Yeah. So, but Japan, that's Japan's thing. They most of the guys grow up playing amateur baseball where they practice. The percent of time on a ball field spent playing in actual games is probably less than a tenth of a percent.
Yeah. So I guess the conclusion of this assignment is that I think more than half of the pitchers on the list have been guys who might be considered elite in NPB as far as pitchers. And then we have some guys who had an outlier game. But for the most part, you have to have an array of pitches and you have to be able to execute. And I guess I'm wrong. I'll say I'm sorry to Patrick, but I still think even if you have all that stuff going on, you still have to be able to execute. And that's the biggest thing. And then you have to have some fortune and you have to have guys make a lot of plays behind you as well. So I apologize.
Yeah, it Patrick. Happens. I mean, we do see games where there isn't much good luck needed. And I think the minimum of pitches you need is really two. So if you've got two pitches and the batters have absolutely no clue what's coming next, this is sort of a common thing in no hitters and, you know, in one hitters. The batters just look completely lost. They look frustrated and lost and dejected. So you don't necessarily need three, but if you've got two that are working and you know where they're going and the batters have no clue, okay, go for it.
All right. All right. We were going to talk about some crazy plays and some other things, but we are running out of time. So let's go to fielding questions. All right. James in Houston via email. And I believe it's Houston, if this is the same James, which I did a search on the email and it was. And he says, a while back, I sent a fan question on Twitter with the high heat hashtag. And I heard you say today that you didn't have any questions, so I thought maybe you didn't see it and I should send it via email. So here's my question. Growing up as a half Japanese kid in the States, I always had a keen interest for Japanese sports. And so I was very excited when Mr. Baseball starring Tom Selleck came out in 1992. Have either of y'all seen the film? And if so, did you enjoy it? I thought I remember you both saying that you came to Japan sometime in the 90s. So I'm curious if either of y'all were there early enough to remember the film. Or release and the Japanese reaction to the film. If it's certainly focused on the dynamic y'all have described a couple times of the former big leaguer expecting a big drop in competition when coming over and then being humbled by Japanese baseball, along with the stoic and demanding manager. Doesn't hurt that it features your favorite team, John. Thanks for all your hard work y'all put into the show. It's been very appreciated. So, I apologies for skipping over your post. I search and comb through for high heat and hashtag high heat as often as I can. And of course, it's usually comes directly to me anyway, so I don't have to do any searching, but apologies. Now, I was living in Nagoya at the time the movie was filmed. We get this question every 3-4 years?
About.
Yeah. So I was living
maybe
in Nagoya.
More often, yeah.
Yeah, I was living in Nagoya at the time it was filmed, and I couldn't wait to see the movie. And I was even going to go to Nagoya Stadium to be an extra in the crowd shots. And I had to teach English at night, so I didn't go. But I heard about Tom Selleck hanging out at one of the local water holes. And, there was a lot of fanfare when the movie was being filmed. Now, the one thing that I have always laughed about in seeing the movie is that there were no areas of Nagoya that had the kind of office building area that's seen in The Office where the Dragons manager's daughter worked. So I think they either went to Osaka or Tokyo to film some of those scenes. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed the film immensely, although my Japanese at the time really wasn't good enough to absorb what the national take on the movie was. I didn't hear a lot of people talking about it. They didn't seem to me, they didn't really seem to get the gist of it. It was just Japanese baseball to them. It wasn't anything new, but I didn't have the Japanese ability at the time to gain a good perspective about what was going on in terms of those things. But I would love to see a sequel. I think it's about time for one. Don't you think, Jim?
Yeah, remake, I think. I always, another story for another day. But yeah,
they could update it though, too. Yeah, but go ahead, your ex-wife.
Sure, they could. My ex-wife's take on it has lasted a long time. She said, I couldn't take that movie seriously because the manager was, I just can't picture a foreign player taking a bath with the manager's daughter and everything going smoothly.
Yeah, I can't either. You're supposed to be swinging your bat on the diamond, bro.
Hashtag high heat.
Use your bat on the diamond, man, not for my daughter.
Whoa, you got some balls.
You think?
So, but no, I mean, much of the movie was wonderful. But as far as like you, as far as the Japanese reaction, I really, other than that, I don't really have a clue. But yeah, I mean, parts of the, you know, as we had Leon Lee on the blog talking about how he might have said that on the podcast about how one of his lines, oh, that was in our my blog in a live chat. Where he said one time his brother told him, "You're swinging not to miss. You're not swinging to hit. You're swinging not to miss."
Mm.
And that found its way into the movie.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. So yeah, I really did enjoy it, and I've seen it, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, which is a lot for me. I don't rewatch movies a lot.
I do, but I've only seen it once.
So it might be time for you to see it again, because every time you see, I know that you probably know this, but every time you see a movie multiple times, you discover things that you didn't notice. And I often find myself looking into the crowd scenes at Nagoya Stadium to see if I can find people I know.
Mm.
But yeah, it was a great movie. I've been to that stadium a lot of times, so it was really fun. And like I said, an updated version would be much appreciated, because I think it's about time, because the dynamics of Japanese baseball have changed, and the kind of foreigners who are coming over have changed. So yeah, update that sucker. Let's do it.
All right.
Thanks so much for the question. And we did get a couple more questions that are on deck. So thank you very much to those of you who have sent. And anyone else who has a question, hit us up at JBWPodcast on X.com with the hashtag high heat. Send questions by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.